Hey, everybody, it's the Foch's Corner with the UVA King of Twitter, UVA Basketball King of Twitter, Coach Phony Bennett, and T.W. Hong, and out of California, Dougie Fresh-Smith will be joining us soon, as will the Heart of the Bottom, West Palm's own Chris Havlicek, and I'm Mark Jerome, where we discuss the latest in social media and all of the recent tweets that typically revolve around UVA basketball and some other subjects. Coach, what do we have this week? What's going on? And by the way, let's start with the FSU game.
Do we have to?
We don't have to.
Yeah, what's your routine after a loss like that? Do you stay off or do you linger around?
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to think through any tweets. I mean, you know, if you want to make any broad assessments of the team, maybe don't do that right after a game. And then a lot of times I just get frustrated reading how fans are reacting. And right now it's weird because a lot of people, I think, aren't really sure what to make of this team. And I think that's, if I'm trying to sum everyone that I follow on Twitter, it's still this observation that they've lost badly to three top 15, top 20 teams, and then they've won most of the other games, although not always easily. And so, you know, there's a lot of discussion right now, I think, of you know, is this a good team? And I think it's a good team. It's not a great team yet, but where they're going to fall, I think we're not used to being this far into the season and still just not knowing what kind of team we have on our hands.
I was just going to ask you, both you guys, because T-Dubs, you are probably the historian of this team, of this program. So you can probably identify this team or recognize this team as well as anybody else and compare it. Both of you guys, can you remember a team that was similar to this one? I mean, clearly we're in a different year and a different time, and you have to take into consideration lack of practice, no fans. What is this? This team is different than any other team.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, you know, it just feels like the pieces are there, but it hasn't really come together. And I think you can largely chalk that up to COVID. But again, there are some teams that have been, and some of those are more experienced teams. I mean, we have, what, three of our starters, four of our starters didn't play for UVA last year. Trey Murphy, Sam Beek. So three of our starters didn't even take the court for us last year. So, I mean, that's a thing that's going to take a while, and everything else is limited, that everything that's going on around it. You know, but there's still time.
She does.
How I look at it is more of wins against big programs in a row. Like, that's how you generally, like, oh, how far can they go? It's usually can you string a group of wins that are like tournament teams. So far we haven't really done that. It seems like, you know, we're beat the teams we're kind of supposed to beat, and then the top ones we struggle. So that, to me, sounds like a Sweet 16 kind of ceiling of a team, right? You squeeze by first weekend, and then maybe you win one big one, and then you're going to face some really stiff competition in that second weekend, and that's kind of where we are, right? That we've lost those type of games. So that's kind of where my head is at with it. I mean, we've had plenty of teams historically like that, but maybe not with the makeup of bigs that can shoot like this. But that's kind of where how I see it. But what is your take, Mark? Well, you've seen this team.
It's definitely a unique team, right? And it's a team that as we all agreed on in the beginning of the season, when we weren't playing that great, we all agreed, like, this is a reflection of guys not playing together.
Right. Like,
guys who don't have the experience. And this is not a team where the ball is just rolled out and you say, let's just go play. Right. This is a team that's typically well coached, and it takes time. It takes time to learn a system. It takes time to learn strategies. It's not Duke. It's not Kentucky. It's a team that needs development. And I've watched them develop, and there are times when I'm like, wow, these guys have gotten so much better. And I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, talking about how we would fare against Gonzaga, and they said, oh no, it's, you know, Gonzaga would still beat us pretty good. And I was like, no, they wouldn't. I think they're still better than us, but it would not be that big of a difference in a game like it was. I mean, that was, the score was 20, but it could have been, I mean, it was 30, right?
Right.
And when you look at it now, I think it's probably, I mean, anything could happen, right? The way we're playing now. And I think it's probably somewhere between 8 and 13. But within that 8, if you keep it close and keep it close and we're hitting shots and we're playing better defense, they have so many weapons, but not to just compare to Gonzaga. But the reason I asked is to piggyback on T-Dub's question, right? And talk about the fans and the social media responses. And is it the same typically when during losses this season as it has been in other seasons, like recent seasons?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the commenting is the same because people are just commenting in the moment. I mean, there's some people trying to make broader proclamations about the Bennett program, but that has obviously died down a lot since winning the championship. I mean, it's hard to say that this isn't championship winning basketball when it actually happens. So, but there's still, you know, there's some folks that are down on this team. There are some folks that still are believers in this team despite some of the evidence. I mean, I think the truth, like I think TW nailed it as far as where the team is right now. And I think what bothers us is, you know, we can see the ceiling being much higher for this group of guys. When you have bigs in the Tony Bennett system that can shoot like that, which he's never had something like this, I think as a fan, you expect to see them beating the top teams too. And, you know, even though Duke's having a down year, I think, you know, this is going to be a worrisome matchup because Duke has typically had our number and we have struggled. I mean, the games that we have won, I think there's probably only maybe one that was really, you know, pretty UVA controlled the whole way, but it's been a tight series. So, I mean, this is going to be a good game. I hope nobody underestimates what Duke's bringing in.
Dougie, you played in the early 90s.
Yep.
And, you know, of course, there wasn't social media back then. But I'm just curious, like, do fans always expect perfection?
I don't think so. I don't think they always did. I think now they kind of do. And it's like, as you said, with social media, everyone's got a platform so they can be a tough whisperer, meaning you're not going to get in Kihei's face and say, you know, Kihei, you had a bad game, but you're going to say it on Twitter or in a forum. I call that tough whispering, right? Because you're not like in the guy's grill. My knocks on this team, and I think it's a product of pandemic, non-preparation, et cetera. I don't see a certain toughness all the time. And when I don't mean tough, like you're a tough guy. It's more of like enthusiasm, energy, toughness, all kind of bound together, right? And I don't see obvious leadership. And I think I'm starting to think the reason there's not an obvious leader, Sam's been there for 2 years, a year and a half now, right? So he can't say I've had this. This was my team's, you know, for 4 years. I see him wanting to do it. I don't think he feels like it's his team at this point. And you know, Kihei, I think, has done it in locker room settings, not on the court. So I think it's kind of the toughness. And when I say toughness, I mean more than toughness, like enthusiasm, energy. And there's just not a leader to say, hey guys, get together. Here's what we got to do. Because I think they're good kids. And I don't think they want to call somebody out for, you know, you missed the assignment, you did this, you did that. You see parts of it. So I think that's what the biggest thing this team's missing.
I'm jumping really quickly and then phoning in details by all means. It's still the one glaring piece missing from this team, right? That energizes a defense. And this is a defense laden program.
Yeah.
Right. And you talk about toughness, is that one player that I have not, since I've been watching Tony Bennett basketball, it's not there this year.
Yeah. Right? We need an in-house on team bully. We need somebody
you didn't have a bully in the past, but you had an athletic, right? Strong, high IQ, intense, tough defensive big, right? And, yes. And Mamadi, if you remember, Mamadi was ready to fight every game if he needed to.
Oh, yeah.
And he was going to support his teammates, right? And before that, and last year we had Mamadi and Braxton. Braxton was a heck of a defensive player, right? Although didn't play center, but he could cover a lot. He could play 1 through 4. He guard 1 through 4. And before that, Isaiah and Jack Salt and, you know, the list goes on. Akil and AG and Darren Atkins and Mike Toby. You know, So I think what's missing is that one piece and that soul of the team.
Soul might be the better word.
But
help, you know, the really.
That encompasses the whole thing, though. You know, Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm's a tough dude. You know, he's not hourly tough, but he's not taking shit. Like, he's not
even like
letting things get by.
If we go. I mean, Mark, your point is really, it's the help defender, the really good help defender. We just don't have one, especially in this system. You need one dynamic help defender, and we don't have that.
Fair. We've been spoiled with that. Again, I've talked about it. Oh, I never noticed big men until Akil, Darius Atkins. I never noticed it until watching these guys. Yeah. I'm like, you got to be kidding me the way they guard. Like, I've said it a thousand times, four guys. And so we've been spoiled. Mama D, obviously, you know, Jack in his own right in different ways. Like, you want to run into Jack? Like that Carolina kid on the screen with Jay. Right. Like, he thought that was tough. Right. Ted Jeffries or Jack.
T Dubs and Coach, you guys have watched, as I mentioned earlier, so many teams, but look at that Malcolm Brogdon, Justin Anderson team.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Who's scoring them? Like, who's gonna be tougher than them?
Great example, Justin. What a tough dude.
That hard nose, that hustle, defense, and
strong, athletic, IQ.
Never gave up on plays. I remember when he called him out for all those blocks he was getting from behind were because he had got beaten in the first place, but he didn't give up and he made the play. And Mamadi, you know, was another guy that stayed with plays and really showed some stuff. We've got some decent on ball defenders on our guards, but yeah, nobody who's just that
eraser.
But it's like Akil teaching, being the teacher to like Darius, who I thought Darius might have been the most improved player I've ever seen one year to the next.
Darion,
who's that? Atkins?
Yeah, Atkins.
Atkins, Darion.
Oh, right.
You're probably confused with Darius Thompson. Darius Thompson.
No, I'm not. I just messed it up. Atkins. But you know, like Justin McCoy doesn't have that example. He had it last year with maybe Mamadi, but Mamadi's a lot more gifted than these guys we're talking about. So he could cheat it. He could cheat it, and he could figure it out. Whether he knew it or not,
Mamadi is tearing it up in the G League right now.
Yeah, I know.
Spoiler: that's one of our tweets.
I say, do you have a tweet about that, T-Dub? I guess we got to get into tweets eventually. But
anyhow, that's all. That's how I've seen it.
We need that guy. Who's going to be that guy? Who's the most likely? I mean, aside from Justin McCoy.
I would say the difference between with the lack of that, the other side is the shooting ability that this team has. You can't count them out in the tournament, right? The tournament is about getting hot at the right time, hitting 100%. Threes. How many teams have we seen? VCU going from playing around to Final Four will just shot the lights out. All this, you know, and this team could do that. You could absolutely see this team making every three and beating someone they weren't supposed to. They haven't done it yet, but I imagine it's possible.
Yeah, this isn't a situation where anyone's going, this isn't a good team, or it's no. This team should be better than who they are given the pieces that they have. Sorry, Fresh.
No, it's all right. No, it's a better point. But VCU, and I remember that team because I watched them early in the year, totally random. But to Marky's point, Marky's word, they had soul. They were tough, and they had some guard that you didn't think was good, and he was great. They had a lot of soul, leadership, energy.
They are also 30% from three for the season and 52 for the tournament, right?
Huge, I didn't know that.
Difference that a team could do that. So, well, you know, we can do that.
All right. TW Kenpon Way.
I mean, I just remember watching that. How the hell did they get there? And it was really, you get hot at the right time, you know, and they were playing that frantic style that makes teams, a lot of like iffy teams, nervous in the tournament, similar to the zone, right? If you're not confident and you go up against the Syracuse zone, they're going to expose you, or you go up against Havoc or full-time press, you're in trouble.
And we've crossed the line, but VCU back then had nothing to lose, right? We've crossed that line where, as far as a fan base and whether it's the players or coach, we have something to lose. You're the defending national champion. You're the reigning national champion, right?
And Fresh, who was the great player VCU had when we were there?
Kendrick Warren.
Yes, Kendrick Warren. Yes.
Yep. Remember he used to drink every Nutrafrim in our locker room.
That's right.
Do you guys remember Kendrick? Mark, did you know Kendrick Warren?
Sounds familiar.
Oh, so we recruited him hard. He wasn't able to come to Virginia. Went to look up highlights. The guy, TW, you remember him? You do.
No, I don't remember him.
Oh my gosh. But I think he lived in our locker room his junior and senior year in high school.
I agree.
Awesome guy. He felt like he was part of the team, but dude, look up his highlights. It's insane at VCU what he did.
Right.
It's a Bubba Chuck, Michael Evans, you know,
kind of one of those.
Yeah.
And have just joined for those listening. You want to jump into some tweets?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's see what we got for this week.
Let's tweet. I have a favorite tweet of the day, by the way. So
I'll go ahead. What is your favorite tweet?
So Zach Wonder, the boy Wonder, he tweeted out the second best player since Ralph Sampson. And he had Bryant.
Him.
And he had Malcolm. Those two, right? Or maybe Dawn as well. I forget. I don't know what's real, what's Twitter anymore. So, you know, you guys all know who I said is number two, right? And I gave the honorable mention Dawn Staley. And so Zach asked later in the day, he's like, I'm a 17-year-old kid. I'm just asking to be educated. Was the ACC tougher back in the late 80s, 90s, early 80s, whatever, than it is now? And I was like, Zach, like, let's just go to class. And then, you know, you can imagine, like, TW, you always talk about the who's your audience. And, like, you know, 9 out of 10 were like, oh, it's not even close, Brian Stith. And he's like, yeah, but, you know, Malcolm in his own right. And they're like, nope, Brian Stith. But and you can't, by the way, hate anybody for saying it's Malcolm Brogdon, right?
No, you really can't.
I mean, he's going to have a better pro career than Bryant on paper.
So he had better college accolades than Bryant. So I saw somebody point
out. I don't agree with that.
I'm talking actual being All-American and ACC Player of the Year.
First ever defensive and overall player of the year.
That's incredible. But again, back to perspective, Bryant averaged 16, 18, 19, and 20 or whatever in 4 years. Like,
right.
You know, Malcolm made himself. I'm not taking anything away from these guys. It's incredible. But Bryant had 4 years. He was all ACC at least three.
Yeah, he was the only player, I think at the time, he was the only player to go
Rookie
of the year, three-time first team all ACC.
And he was second or third his first year. And every night he's playing against 3 to 4 NBA guys.
Yeah.
Who would have been one and done.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So,
it was a round robin. It's completely unfair to compare at this point. It's kind of like
today. It is.
The other thing that I think is different, and I didn't see Zach's tweet, you know. I think when people compare eras, they're just looking sort of at, and players in eras, they're looking at athleticism and strength. What's evolved maybe even more than the players is the game and how many threes we take now versus how many threes we took then. How offenses were built from the inside out. Now it's kind of outside in. Totally different game, different rules as well, which I think is important. You know, Fresh, you remember the amount of contact and hand checking was like absurd.
Insane.
Now, you know, and I always talk about And I always talk about how when a team's on a run, we would just get into somebody's body. We'd foul them hard 2 or 3 times down the floor, and that guy would get out of his rhythm. Now, if you do that, you know, theoretically, you're risking getting ejected. It's not sportsmanlike, all that. It was a much more physical league back then.
Flagrant too.
Right. And so I think that's worth pointing out that, you know, not only have the players evolved, but the game has and the rules have as well.
Yeah, the hand checking is the biggest thing, especially in the NBA when they're talking Jordan versus whoever. It's like Jordan with no hand checking is going to just not even be fair.
Oh, can you imagine? You can't touch him? Yeah. Are you kidding? Look at those videos from the Pistons and whoever, Knicks. Yeah. I mean, those guys Michael Jordan's jumping 4 feet higher than any of us are, and he's getting slammed to the ground
Right.
You know, contorting his body. So I will say, I always like talking about guys now that could have played then. 100% Malcolm Brogdon would have been great in our era.
For sure.
100%. And not everybody, by the way, but Malcolm for sure would have been great.
Yeah. He would have been really solid.
That's some Back to the Future shit for you, Marky.
There it is. Is that all the first one?
Three.
All right.
Two.
Fresh is all right. So the first, oh, first
three tweet. And with two curses and one Ken Pong.
Oh, I did say Ken Pong. Tinway, Ken Pong.
The first one I had, Virginia men's basketball tweet. Joey Buckets, fifth in 3-pointers made, fourth in 3-point percentage in the NBA this season.
Crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. What kind of numbers do you have to get be an all-star in the NBA? I mean, the problem with him, he's got three guys who are on his team.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
He's got to be in the three-point shooting contest, right?
Yeah, he should be. I mean, if he wants to do it, I don't know if they're going to do that this year.
They are. So the NBA announced today, instead of having all-star weekend, which was, you know, a weekend's worth of festivities, it's the NBA all-star game. And before that, they're doing the three-point shootout, and they're doing the dunk contest at halftime. That was announced today.
Oh, wow.
So condensed into one night, make it easier for the players. It's not going to be, you know, a four-day Super Bowl-like event. But it'll be good and, you know, always worth watching.
I thought they were going to say three-point shootout will take place via Zoom, and they can shoot in their backyard. And
right.
Count it that way. All right. That'd be interesting. No other, I didn't pull any UVA tweets other than we're going to go over this one. Mama D from Bennett Conlin. Mama D's last four G League games, including today, 19 points a game, 57% field goal percentage, 9.8 rebounds. He's doing really well.
Yeah. I've seen a couple highlight reels of him, and I mean, he's just killing it there. I mean, he's looking like a man among boys. I mean, he had this
exactly.
Thought, if you haven't seen the tweet, I mean, he just, destroys a guy. Maybe we can link that when we post this. I mean, it was,
I'll put that in there.
But I think
Mark,
UVA fans on Twitter have probably actually seen that play already. I'm happy for him. I mean, I hope he makes the top league soon.
Question is, what does this do for him? Because the Bucks have big guys. I don't know what they're going to do with Mama D at this point. Like, it's all about finding a fit in the NBA, right? What's your take on that, Mark?
I've been watching some G League games recently, and there aren't too many big guys that are playing.
Right.
Like there's a kid, Moses Brown, who's on the OKC Thunder G League team, and he's murdering guys. Right. And truthfully, like he hardly played at UCLA. He left after his first year, and I know him from New York City. And if he were in the NBA, he struggled big time in the NBA. But in the G League, they're playing against teams that are sick, have the biggest guys like 6'7", 6'8". And Moses Brown's like 7 feet tall. And you can see he's doing well. He's getting more skilled. But it's a different game when you have height. Now, I think Mommy's insanely talented. So I don't want to – and I haven't seen Mommy play, but I've seen other teams play. I've seen four or five games so far. And there hasn't been one of the big guys that's been decent besides. So – Mamadi, I'm waiting for. I want to see Mamadi play against Ty's team.
Yeah, it's coming up tomorrow.
Is it to us? That's tomorrow. Okay.
I think it's tomorrow, Friday.
Yeah.
Next one, Austin Spurs, our very own London. 14 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals.
That's a really good game.
He's been playing pretty well. He had one tough shooting night. Other than that, he's been playing well. He's been good.
I don't know how many minutes I saw a couple of his stat lines.
Yeah.
I mean, it's up and down. He's not always, but he's on the court a lot. 20 minutes.
Yeah. No, right. He's playing at least like 23, 24 minutes a night, right?
Yeah.
I saw one game where he had like 20, 29.
Yeah. I think in the G League, you take away the points, right? Because Corey Alexander said this years ago. He played in the G League for Roanoke for a year or two.
Yep.
And he said, everybody's trying to get points. And Corey, being an NBA veteran, he's like, guys, he's like, the NBA has guys to score. They're not looking for you to score, right? So I like the all-aroundness of Mama D and what you said, London's you know, your assists, your steals, your rebounds, your blocks, you know, defensive stuff. And that's, you know, that's what's going to bring you up, not because you scored 40 against the Lizards from West Palm Beach, where Havlicek was subbing in that night.
I did.
At 40 years
I know
old.
You did.
But you know what, Dougie, this year is so different with the G League. Like, even up to through last year, it was just run and gun. And there were players who were like, you know, construction workers or stockbrokers in the offseason or whatever they were doing. This G League season, there are a lot of talent. All the teams, like the guards and the forwards, are really talented. This is a talented group of guys. The bigs aren't great, and they're not a lot of bigs. But they're high-level players.
Phony said it. I've watched Mamadi's highlights in this thing, and it looks like he's playing against high school teams. And that might be experience. It might be size. It might be highlights. Again, quote-unquote highlights, right? I'll tell you what Mamadi's done the best I've seen is his ball handling, meaning dribbling. He can actually dribble more than three times and not lose it.
He's skilled.
He gets around. Yeah, he got and around. That one highlight, he gets around a guy and reverses it. I'm like, man. Yeah.
He's skilled and super athletic.
Yeah. I feel like the G League has really gotten its act together over the last few years. I know it was, you know, so – for a long time, it was a very distant JV to the NBA, but I feel like, and maybe COVID has helped it because I know a lot of the other leagues around the world aren't playing, and maybe that's concentrated some talent, but maybe I'm paying more attention to it, but just from a spectator point of view, it feels much more authentic and sort of, you know, ready for prime time than it has in the past.
It's good basketball, and one of the reasons why it's better, Habs, is there are fewer teams right now. Because not everybody has a G League. Not every NBA team has a G League team this year playing, right? I think it's like 2/3 of the teams. So there's a higher concentration of really good players.
Yeah.
And also, Mamadi's playing for the G League Magic. He's on the Bucks.
Right.
So, oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's also getting fairly, prominently featured on ESPN and some of the sports websites. Like, it's not such a distant backroom league like it has been in the past. Like, it was kind of front and center, you know, not front page, but you scroll down a little bit on ESPN and there was the G League schedule today. It surprised me.
Yeah, it's great.
But before COVID too, I know the Westchester Knicks, I think they're called. Like, it's something fun for the family to do, right? It's, you live in Scarsdale, you live in New Rochelle, you can go pay 10 bucks a ticket or five or whatever it is, three, and take your kids and have a great experience watching good basketball. And so supposedly, I haven't been to one, but there's like good atmospheres and it's like a real thing, like semi-pro. You guys watch that movie? I recommend it.
Does anyone know what the G stands for, by the way?
Gatorade.
Okay.
We should let everybody know that people in Scarsdale aren't worried about spending $5 or $150 to go to a...
The reason I said it, a buddy I worked with at Susquehanna lives in Scarsdale, and he has all the money in the world, but he took his kids and he said how fun it was. That's why I said Scarsdale. But that's fair.
It is.
And then here's this next Thunder, Oklahoma Blue. Ty had 16 today, 6 for 10.
Okay.
Three boards, 4 assists. Yesterday. So good.
Yeah. They have a really good roster. They got a lot of guys that can play on that team.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, they can all play. We know that.
It's good to see Ty out there just playing again. It's been a while. Yeah. And then I already did this one. And then I was gonna change gears a little bit. Actually, we'll go to this one first. I don't know if you guys have seen this NBA Top Shot. So what the NBA has done is they have a Bitcoin that they're now tying NBA moments to those Bitcoins and selling them. And serial number, each one, all the transaction history is out there. So now people are buying NBA crypto dollars that are tied to NBA plays. And then the one I'm showing here is DeAndre Hunter's rookie debut dunk. This is hard to grasp conceptually. There's 300 of these total made, whatever, Bitcoins of DeAndre Hunter with his dunk tied to it. The highest price one is 99,000.
There's 30 different ones of them. Why would one be worth more than the others? Are they not all identical, digitally speaking?
Yeah, so they're serial numbered. So, you know, people want the first one, the last one, and then his jersey number. Those are the two that generally fetch the most.
All right, let me save everyone some brain damage. Let's go to the next topic, T-Dub.
By the way, it's human genius. Invent scarcity.
Yep.
It's like I have the last gallon of gasoline. Oh, milk. And nobody has it, but I have it. And so here's the price. Like, it's just inventing scarcity.
Yeah, I love it. It
ends badly.
It's like we're watching.
So like, yeah, there's basically a digital thing moment you can own. I mean, it's pretty random. I'm not going to lie.
So does this replace cards, T-Dubs?
They want it to. They want it to be they think it's just like a currency. So the equivalent of this, they say, yeah, they can take this and then, you know, you go to Disney World or Disneyland and you get Disneyland Bitcoin, right? And you can buy and trade it. And on this front, you buy an NBA ticket, you see a game-winning shot, that becomes your moment. Your ticket is now tied to this thing. Now you own a moment because you're a part of it. And then you can sell it on the open market. Fascinating. I don't get it personally. I don't see how it's going to work, but...
Yeah, that's what happens cool. When you print $30 trillion and you're in debt. So next topic.
And the next topic is still kind of related. $40 million invested in Golden Auctions, which is a collectible trading market. And the people include Bill Simmons, I think The Rock. There's a bunch of like celebrities, Mark Wahlberg. Kevin Durant is one of them. I think there's a couple rappers in there and put in $40 million into collectibles. Yeah. So this is like, it's kind of similar and tied, but it's like, wow, we talked about this show a couple of times. These collectibles are getting out of hand.
Well, I've got some, I think I told this story at one point on an earlier podcast, but my dad, as he got older, decided he was going to sell his memorabilia collection. And he had some really great stuff, you know, his 25,000 point ball and, you know, some really major stuff, his rings. he also had some lesser valuable things like he spoke at the Boys Club in Roxbury, Mass, and they gave him a plaque. We had it all in this room and he decided that he wanted to sell it because he was very kind of unattached to it. And, you know, I said, Dad, I sort of tried to talk him out of it. I didn't think it was we were sort of knew he was getting older and we were emotional about it. He decided, I want to sell everything. I'm going to keep a couple rings and a couple keepsakes, but let's unload it. He made more in the auction, that auction. And we went with the auction company that had done Larry Bird's and Julius Irving's and I think Bill Russell's. And he made more in that auction than he did in his entire playing career. And it got to the point where literally like the Celtic suitcase that he carried for 16 years, which was a Samsonite, like probably at the time, probably a $15 suitcase, but it had a Celtics logo on it. You know, that went for like $70,000 or some absurd amount.
TW bought it, by the way.
Yeah,
T-Dub has it.
I would love to have it.
And if it wasn't for COVID, he'd be traveling with it right now.
That's incredible.
But my point,
not surprising at this, at
the collectibles market, the collectibles market is really robust. And with all the wealth that's been created overseas in China and Russia, the biggest collectors are over there. And we finally got kind of like a report on what everything went for and where it went to. And I was shocked by how many of the purchases were overseas buyers, which speaks to the global nature of the NBA brand. You know, I would have figured it was a bunch of like, you know, guys from Boston who grew up watching my dad. No, it was like 35-year-old like tech entrepreneurs from China that were buying it. And it was
it's probably to TW's point. They're probably speculators. Like they probably did all the homework. Like, you know, this comparable to this, you know, you're looking at this stock versus RSI. Da, da, da. So they probably know.
It's a big business.
It's crazy.
It's a big business. And
the scarcity, I didn't know that. The scarcity of it is what's cool. What really drives it. Right. And plus you get oil tycoons buying it and like the sentimental stuff. It's like combination of art, investment and sport all together.
It is. And the scarcity of it leads to a lot of fraud. So I can't tell you how many, I'm going to say, you sometimes stumble upon these old school, like sports collectible shops in these little towns, right? Every time I go in, if we're like in a town, I'll go in, I'll look, and there'll be one of my dad that is clearly not his signature. And so my point is there is so much complete fraud in the industry. And we had to go through a real authentication process for this because this is a reputable auction house. But think about it. If I could take a picture of Michael Jordan, print it out on nice paper, and then with graphics simulate like he signed it, which is very easy to do, by the way. You could do it at your local Kinko's.
Yeah.
And then mark it up and sell it for $400. Like that market will get regulated at some point. And maybe this is the start of it, but you know, for people who love it, T-Dub's right. It's sort of like collecting contemporary art or something like that.
Yeah. I think people my age who grew up loving Jordan and sports and all that culture, I don't want a Mona Lisa. Like that doesn't do it for me. Right. It's a Jordan rookie is really cool.
Yeah. Or
Joe Montana's rookie is really cool because that takes me right back to my childhood, which is what all this stuff is doing, right? It's just like, how do you become a kid again now that you have cash?
Well, and what's interesting about the Bitcoin thing and with respect to what Hav's talking about is not only is there scarcity there, but it's a known scarcity. And that's the problem. That's why there's fakes, you know, with that Bitcoin thing, you know how many of each of those highlights there is, and each one is traceable. There's no question of validation. So it's a little bit more reliable, even though you're not getting anything tangible with it.
Here's my question. Like, I understand how you could look at hanging a Larry Bird jersey in your office and being really proud of that. I don't understand how you can kind of have pride because you've got like a video Bitcoin image that you own. Like I just, maybe I'm just too old school to understand that, but.
I mean, the people that are buying these are probably have their baseball cards in a safe deposit box somewhere. Right. It's not something that they're.
Just look at this, what I pulled up.
But it's all the rage. It's like it goes back to GameStop. It goes back to Bitcoin. It just goes back to like it's total nonsense. But it's probably going to work, which is why I'll never be involved.
I mean,
to all our listeners out there, stay tuned. Stay tuned for the summer release of the Locker Room Access cryptocurrency coming soon to a bank near you.
When our podcast highlights will be sold in serial. Yeah. No, like, look at this. One sold for $250,000 LeBron James highlight. That's incredible to me.
So, like, he doesn't own that. He owns it on Bitcoin, but it's NBA Entertainment owns that. Like, I don't get that. Like, why would you pay $250,000 for that?
It makes no sense. But, you know, people said the same thing about a piece of cardboard many years ago, and now look at it. So, who knows?
Yeah.
There's not something about a piece of cardboard that's intrinsically more valuable. I mean, it's, you know, they're made out of the same thing that cereal boxes are made out of. Like,
it's just as dumb. I mean, but this is just even more dumb because it's digital. You don't even get the satisfaction of holding it.
But that's the world these days, right? Like you buy something going this way, not like GE used to be $100, now it's 10.
Yeah,
like kids are like that's a loser. Tesla was 50. Now it's 500. Now it's 1,000. It's going to go to 20,000. So you buy Tesla.
Yeah. Mark invited me to Clubhouse and I've been listening to some NBA Top Shot people that are making, they're not quitting their jobs and doing Top Shot, but it's like people putting a few thousand in and pulling out $20,000, $50,000, $100,000. It's like, wow, I have no clue how, but it's interesting nonetheless.
I just had a conversation about Clubhouse.
T Dubs, next time you go on Top Shop on Clubhouse, please invite me. Let me know.
All right. Well,
can you guys, so I'll ask for all the viewers out there, tell me a little bit more about this. I mean, I know
we have Clubhouse.
Yeah.
So Clubhouse, I mean, it's not too different than this, except it's like a semi-public, it's an invite only, but it's Twitter with audio, right? So you start a room and you go in and you have speakers, equivalent of is this, we record it, post it. This, the Clubhouse is live. So we could do this on Clubhouse. We could talk about it and anyone could just join and listen. And it happens like a conversation that's semi-public. And then when it's done, it's done. It doesn't get posted or anything. It's just like a live conversation. You're just like going into a room and talking to some people. And an example is like Mark Cuban and Elon Musk go into a room and talk. You can listen. And if you have a question, you raise your hand, they pull you in, you ask a question. I mean, it's kind of like Twitter, but it's not. I mean, it's like, it's fascinating. It's like a live conversation. Would you say, Mark?
Right.
Yeah. It's like you're going into a convention, right? And there are 20 different rooms with different seminars and
breakouts, yeah,
and panels, right? Breakout rooms. And you pick which one you want to go to and you become a member of the audience. And sometimes a member of the audience can be invited to the panel to speak.
Yeah.
Okay.
And participate and share information. And it's just all, it's tons of information based and for Top Shop. But then there's some that are, I listened to one the other day, was on R&B.
Yeah.
Right? Just music and people just talking. And then you have people who are friends and just get on it together and just share conversations.
I mean, well, I could see us doing this on Clubhouse at some point, right? It could get big enough where you just do it live. You have a conversation, Fresh curses a bunch, but then it doesn't record, right? It just disappears. Right. So it's like, it's pretty cool. I definitely see it's basically Twitter with audio and it's invite only. What invite you have if you want to try it out?
Yeah, I'd love to see
some, it. Somebody invited me. By the way, can you? The only thing I have
is. Might have been me, Fresh. I think I did. Anyway.
Can you see that or no?
T-Dubs.
Yeah.
T-Dubs.
Yeah, Larry Bird.
From what I understand, mm-hmm. You only get two invites.
They added it. They doubled it.
Oh, they did? Really?
Yeah, they added two more.
And is the rule still, if whoever you invite gets kicked off, you get kicked off as well?
Yeah, I think so. Whoever you're connected, you're forever connected.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Don't curse on undermine. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I got words for them.
So next one, we said we're going to add this one in here. This is the top 10 trending on Netflix as it stands today.
Wow.
Number one being Crime Scene, The Vanishing at Cecil Hotel, which I watched, and it was fascinating. Did you watch it?
I saw some of it. Uh-huh. And the history part was so good.
Fascinating.
Where they talk about when it was built. I think it was built like during the Depression or right before the Depression or in the early 1900s.
Yeah. And now it's on Skid Row. But
yeah. Yeah. That part was amazing. It just, some of these crime shows, they're drawn. They're so drawn out.
Yeah.
And like some of them
could have been one episode.
Yeah. They could be condensed into two or three.
Yeah. Yeah. That one definitely could have been like the last two were just nonsense, but it was still cool to watch. Because I remember that, I don't know, on Twitter, that was definitely a trending one. There was like elevator footage of this girl who looked like she was talking to somebody who wasn't. And then the next thing you know, she's disappeared. Yeah.
But it's all speculation, right? How she gets killed?
Oops. Yeah, all the internet sleuths came out and was like, look at this and look at that. Look at what she's doing here. And there's a shadow of a footprint here. I mean, it was, they do a really good job, like, was showing all the details and then kind of step by step going through what the police went through, which is cool.
All right. So was it anticlimactic at the end or no? It was still fascinating.
It's still, yeah, I don't know. I can see it both ways. It's kind of anticlimactic in what happens. I mean, it turns out to be incredibly logical, but like they take you on this path of like the weirdest thing is you're almost cheering for like, something horrific has happened to her. Like, it's like the most bizarre emotional journey. Like, all right, now for some reason I'm cheering for serial killer to have got her. It's like, what? That's what happens. And have you guys seen any of these other ones? I haven't seen any of those. Like,
I haven't.
What the heck? All right.
I have to admit, and now I'm looking back and like smacking myself in the head, that I watched Bridgerton.
Bridgerton? You saw that one?
Mm-hmm.
I had a coworker telling me about Bridgerton today, and I looked it up, and it didn't sound like something that would be interested in. What were your thoughts on that?
It was a love story, and it was a once again, an elongated love story. But it was, I think for me, it was interesting that the black characters, their roles in the, I forget what year it was, what years it covered. And I think there's going to be a part two, but I don't remember if it was 1800s or 1700, whatever it was. And the relationships, right? So that was always really interesting. Mm. I think that's what pulled me in.
Gotcha. iCarly, I don't know what that is. It sounds... Yeah.
iCarly's like a
Disney like show,
a kids show, like a Nickelodeon or something.
Right, wasn't that years ago? Is
I maybe they maybe, have a movie now?
I don't recognize any of the other ones.
Yeah, all right. Fresh, have you seen any of these? No, you're not a Netflix guy, right?
No, I watch. I love Cobra Kai.
I was gonna say
that's awesome. All American, I loved.
Yep, it's a and good one.
I do love Top Boy Summer House, which I recommend to everybody.
Top Boy Summer House?
I'll have that. You would love it.
Doug, you ever told me about that?
It's in London. Yeah. It's like it's kind of like the Western Indie, like say like Jamaicans that moved to London and they're running the kind of gang drug trade. It's incredible. It'll make you talk like you're British, but you sound cool.
You know who told me about that? Last year, Dean Turner.
Yep. Oh, yeah. See, I'm on next level shit, Marky. I don't think like simpleton.
That's four.
I think like educated people. Bruv.
Well, I'm gonna put that on the watch list.
You will love it. Wagwan.
The one that I am anticipating.
Why?
I'm anticipating this. I saw the trailer. We've tweeted each other about it. It's called Boogie. It's the story of Alfred Chin, a Chinese American basketball star in Queens. Its working title was the TW story, but they changed it to Boogie.
I like it.
But no, I think it looks really good.
TW's older brother stars in it.
Who does?
His older cousin. I mean, like the dude looks like he's 45 years old.
I agree,
but he does look like he plays basketball. And Mark, I'm shocked this was filmed in Queens. I'm shocked you're not an extra, or at least like sitting in the back in the diner scene. That's a missed opportunity for you.
And will anyone watch that? Well, that I guess it's
dude, it's getting like major reviews.
I think a lot of people are gonna watch it. I think it's gonna be very popular.
It's gonna be
anything basketball and different. Yeah. By the way, you know Mark doesn't go to Queens Bridge, right? He's like an old school, the bridge is over. He's Harlem.
Dougie, I used to take Ty, that's where Ty first started playing his tournaments.
In Queens?
In Queensbridge. Okay. Queensbridge, you gotta be careful going to Queensbridge, but
Meta World Peace.
Yep.
I'm thinking about Boogie Down Production. The bridge is over. The bridge is over.
KRS-One. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's going to be a good one. Comes out in 2 weeks in theater.
Yeah, it was great.
Which no I love one can that go stuff. To. So I don't know how they're going to release it elsewhere. But
and the last one trending on YouTube was the Mortal Kombat trailer. I don't know why I included this one. Mortal Kombat 2021.
What is that?
It looks a video game turned into a movie.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
They look like the video game characters doing the stuff they do in the video game. And look, I saw one of the original Mortal Kombat movies. I mean, I don't know when it was from, mid-90s, early 90s or something. And as a movie, it wasn't as bad as you'd expect. Like, I mean, it wasn't high cinema, but I certainly didn't hate it. And this certainly has better special effects than that.
I made this call about 5 years ago because of things like this. I think there's not going to be actors won't exist in like 10 years.
All animated.
I mean, if you can just invent a person like that, it's so like LeBron James looks like a video game playing basketball now, right? They're so good. why do you need an actor? You can just make the whole thing up and invent people, and people are watching it, right? Why do you need Tom Cruise anymore?
Yeah, Brad, you could combine like Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, and LeBron into the ultimate human being.
You can do whatever you want. And right? They can, you know, these guys are so advanced. Why would you pay a guy $20 million to do this movie for me when you can just animate it all? I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, a little bit out there. I get it.
Not nearly as out there as owning a moment on cryptocurrency, by the way. You're still well
for the record.
Yeah, for the
record. For the record. I agree.
All right. That's all I had.
Excellent. We got a big game Saturday.
Saturday. Is it on TV at least?
I think it's the ESPN, I assume, since it's Duke. So
what time are we going on?
8:30 or 7:30?
Okay, prime time ish.
Maybe 7:15. Yeah, the game is at 8. Yeah, so the game's at 8.
Maybe 7:15, depending how many who we have as guests.
Right.
Confirm guests by tomorrow morning, guys.
A dookie.
Let's throw it around.
How about Chris Collins?
He's in season. Like I reached out to.
That's a tough way. That's a tough ask. True.
He's in season, but. Look, there's a lot to break down. There's a lot to analyze with Jalen Jones and his decision, which is, you know, highly controversial, and it was all over the media today. Talk about Coach K and his legacy and how much longer he's going to go. You can talk about the one and dones and how long that is sustainable. But to your point on a text earlier, Fresh and Coach, you know, Duke is still Duke. They might be wounded. They might be down. And that makes me a little nervous.
Yeah.
They have played better without Jalen Jones in the lineup. And I think they were trending that way, which is one of the reasons he left. So, you know, I don't know who they have on their schedule besides us that is ranked, but outside of the ACC tournament, if that happens, this is the biggest game for them. And we're going to run into that all the time, but this is a wounded Duke team and they're going to bring it all at us.
And you've got to understand, for those plucky Duke kids, this is their biggest game of the season. They're going to get up.
Coach K has a thing.
Not going to the tournament, right? This is the closest thing they're going to have to an NCAA tournament game. Coach K will have them up. You know, the cardboard cut.
Yeah,
it won't be the same, but still Duke. I don't care what you say, it's still Duke.
Yep.
Jason Tatum brought up, he was on a podcast with, I don't know which one, the Knuckleheads or something, but he brought up the best speech that Coach K gave him was against Virginia at halftime.
Nice. What do you say?
He called him a St. Louis something. And he's like, that was the button to push. He had 2 points at the half and he had 28 for the game.
Wow. And
lit us up. It was on game day. But he like called something of it. He made fun of him about something about St. Louis.
From where he's from.
Yeah, from where he's from, because he knew that was the thing that would really piss him off. And he said, that was it. That's all I knew. He didn't talk to anyone. He was so pissed at the half. And then he just torched us, which I remember. He made every damn shot in the second half.
And three or four of them were at the end of the shot clock.
Yes.
Big time. Yeah. We need to tweet that to Brad Stevens, because the Celtics are playing like you know what right now. And
Doug, you'll say it for you.
Yeah, I you know the word. I said you can just ding me, Marky. A virtual
that
ding.
Was on Doug. I'll use Thank a you. Doug swear.
But I'm very afraid that Duke is gonna win like a three-team ACC tournament. And
could happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Could happen.
That's very true.
It doesn't make sense to play. And if some of the teams that aren't even close just shut down, I would wait for it.
Everyone's going to opt out, and like UNC Greensboro is going to be like, okay, we'll play. And then UNC Fayetteville is going to be like, we'll play. And then Duke wins and they automatic bid.
Let's just set the record straight for college basketball right now. There's a synonym that's been created called opt out. which means Roy Williams said it best. It's quitting. Like if you opt out, you're quitting. So there was 100%. a big article around Gonzaga and BYU. And if they're going to play in their conference tournament, and they're considering not playing because there are, you know, they're already in, certainly Gonzaga, and BYU's, you know, up there. They want to, they're considering opting out because they don't want to go get COVID and then be ineligible, right, which sort of makes sense, but it goes against every fiber of all of our beings to say, hey, we're going to like not play games and play it really safe. It's just a really weird, I honestly see both sides of the argument, because how bummed would we all be? Virginia's had this really great year. We play well, and then we get COVID at the ACC tournament. We can't participate in the NCAA, and it's like a womp, 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 like kind of year.
And, the entire conference could be out. I mean, if everyone's staying at the same place, everyone's there, and then suddenly the conference, they need like a designated survivor, like one team that stays home and quarantines, so that if the rest of the conference gets COVID, you got that team to say, all right, we represent
the strategy too that they brought up, which I thought was interesting, was if they opt out, so say Gonzaga opts out, they're still going to have the tournament and some team wins that. And it might not be the number two team. It might be the sixth team in the conference. It essentially increases the value of the conference. They've got two teams in instead of Gonzaga just winning it and going.
Right.
So sure. There's a lot of things to consider, and it's just, you know, none of us are, if we all had a crystal ball, we'd all be wealthier, but I think it's just going to get nuts here the last 5-6 weeks.
I guess they're going to have to invite more than 68 teams to Indianapolis, because if a couple end up positive, which will likely happen, they need another, either we have buys.
Yeah, I think teams just get pushed through. I can't imagine how you'd have extra teams there that were,
that are tested and ready to go. I mean, I would guess the first four in, they're going to have those ready to.
I don't know.
Look at, you know, 68 teams. Odds are at least one of those teams is going to
absolutely
have to opt out. You don't want to be that team, which is why if you're a Gonzaga or a Baylor or whatever, you stay home tournament week. You lock yourself in a bubble and make sure that you're not that team that can't compete.
It also means if you opt out, first of all, anybody can spin it where they make it justifiable, as we're talking about, but if you opt out of the conference tournament, especially if your conference tournament is played like in late February, early March, what? You're not playing for like 3 weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You actually do have some time. Yeah.
And when we look at some of the teams that haven't played that well coming back from pauses, that puts you in a very precarious position.
Yeah.
Unless you're Gonzaga.
I don't know. Right. I don't know what he does.
They've never paused.
I'm sure they're going against each other. And if they go against each other, that's a lot of really good players. Right?
Yeah. I mean, they came out of their pause and beat Iowa and us pretty handily.
They paused Gonzaga?
Their fake pause. It was a fake pause, Fred.
I mean, it was, yeah.
Yeah. They flew to Hawaii to play against themselves.
It was a 90-minute pause.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they definitely didn't pause, but you know what I mean.
No, they didn't have games.
So I'm guessing the WCC tournament probably doesn't do a ton for Gonzaga anyway.
Right.
Well, so except they get to play a little bit.
Yeah, get some.
They get to play against opposing teams instead of themselves. Right, and they get and they play against teams that don't necessarily know the ins and outs of their offense and all their strategies.
Yeah, that's so tough. I don't know where I fall on Virginia. I want to see basketball. I'm a fan. I want to see us play. But then it's like, well, rationally speaking, if we're all about winning championships, like national championships, and a lot of fans are like, yeah, the ACC tournament's one thing. We've done that a couple times under Tony Bennett. I want to see Natties. If that puts you in the best position, is that the right move? I want to see us play. I don't know. That's tough.
That is a tough one. Part of I mean, all the people that thought Florida State lost last in 19 was good, I'm guessing you're in the camp of no, let's not go to the ACC tournament. No, Fresh, I'm looking at you.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
No, definitely go. Absolutely go.
But you, but
the only reason I thought that loss was good is because the year before, how much energy they spent to do it, and you know DeAndre got hurt, whatever. Yeah. But it was we were all there, right? It was rigorous, man. It's like you got to win big time games, high level basketball. You have to 100% into it, and then you got to come back a week later. Is that I guess right? And go, you know, play the juggernaut of UMBC.
Play Saturday and then probably Thursday, and Friday, right?
And you're playing ACC teams. Like, so UMBC is playing Vermont, right? New Hampshire. We're playing Duke. We're playing Carolina. It's like, and those games are real, man.
Back to back.
So I was fine that year for us to like exit left and run the table.
So this first year, you just win the ACC tournament this year?
Yeah, for sure. No, this year
we go there and try to win it.
Yeah, less games, right? Less wear and tear.
Av, what's your take? Go to the tournament, and try to win it, or warm
you know
up.
What I think everyone on that team and everyone on this screen is a competitor. The kids are going to want to play. The coaches are going to want to coach. It's an opportunity to go out there and be judged. Right. You're going to step out onto the court in front of a bunch, you know, 20,000 cardboard cutouts and 1500 fans and get judged. Right. You're judged by how you play. And that's what being an athlete is. An athlete is stepping out into the spotlight and saying, I'm ready to go, judge me. And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Teams that get judged more and more frequently and get used to those big games, teams like Virginia and Duke and Gonzaga and now Texas Tech this year. And you look at programs like that, they're used to stepping onto that stage and say, judge me. I think we're good, but let's find out. I'm all for playing. I think we should play full blast. I think this Florida State loss was perfectly timed, right? We're about a month, 3.5 weeks out from the ACC tournament, whatever it is. A good time to take a beating, refocus, get everyone healthy who's hurt, banged up, dinged. We've had a nice break. We play Duke Saturday. Let's go get judged down in Durham and see how we do.
Yeah. By the way, half me and you of our top 10 highlights in life, 4.5 of them are from the ACC tournament. off road and on road. So
I was just going to ask, Dougie, is that on the court?
Yeah, on the court or not?
Oh no, 2, 1.5 on the court. The rest off. It was so great because we go to Charlotte. It was 70 degrees. You know, we had our fly gear. We had the ACC tournament purple, black, brown, blue, orange, like the warm up suit. And
great,
yeah, it was, Mr. Graves making the steaks. Oh, it was so great.
I mean,
the one year we had the snowstorm.
So, you know, for the fans out there, you always look forward. You love your home games because you're playing in front of your fans. But it's also fun when you play on the road. There's different destinations, restaurants, like things you look forward to. The only and Fresh called it out the other day. Florida State was a largely undesirable destination for us. Like longer trip, terrible hotel, didn't really eat anywhere. Probably got
pizza. We've said that.
Right. But There's all these, you know, great places. We would eat at the when we played at Duke, we stayed at that great inn there by the golf course. And there was at each destination, there was a stop. The ACC tournament was the crown jewel of our season, right? We always got a really cool gift. We either got a CD player or a TV or a, you know, something cool, a bunch of gear. And a bunch of fans and friends and students and parents that were traveling down. We played every year in Charlotte at the old Hornets Coliseum, which was huge. I think it was like 28,000 people. And it was a real something that everyone looked forward to. Weather was getting better. Students were on spring break. You're getting up on spring semester. You know, NCAA tournament right after it. It was just an awesome time. So I'm all for them playing. I think we go and play and see how we do. I think we're going to be a really tough out in the NCAA tournament. I think it's really hard to prepare for Virginia. It's easier for ACC teams, but if you're out of conference and you're looking at
Virginia point.
Coming at you, it's tough.
Yep.
I like it. All right.
Go on. I got one thing before, or does anybody have anything before we go?
No.
Floor so, is just a quick announcement. I think most of you guys know this, but Chef Mark, who's done a couple Who's Cooking episodes with me, his dad passed away a few days ago.
Sorry.
Tough time for Chef Mark. So we want to send our LRA family is sending him, good vibes, thoughts, and prayers. His dad was a great guy. I got to know him really well. Huge Philadelphia Eagles fan, and I know he's in heaven smiling about the Carson Wentz trade today. He was never a big fan. We will be resuming the kitchen, and tomorrow I have a very special review that I'll be sending you, T-Dub.
Perfect. We'll send him our best.
Yeah, send him our best, man.
For sure.